Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello again, and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and this hour we discuss addiction and recovery from a Catholic perspective. What does the Church teach about addiction and recovery? And are there resources within the Church to help addicts and families of addicts? Maybe you're facing an addiction-related issue in your own life or the life of your family. Please give us a call, 888-318-7884. We would love to discuss addiction and the Catholic perspective on addiction and recovery. 888-318-7884. Our guest this hour is Michael Vasquez, the co-founder with his wife, Rosemarie, of St. Gregory Centers, which offer what has been called the most advanced substance abuse program in America. Mr. Vasquez is a Fourth Degree Knight of Columbus, member of the Knights of the Holy Sepulchre, founding member of the Des Moines Chapter of Legatus, founding board member of St. Gabriel Communications and Iowa Catholic Radio. And Michael Vasquez, thank you so much for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Thanks for having me.
So St. Gregory Centers are Catholic, and they address addiction issues. Oh, so what's special about them as kind of a Catholic addiction centers?
When Rosemarie and I really became involved or it touched our lives, we felt that first we needed to find a solution to help give people back the hope that they had lost. And you could see it in their eyes every time they walked through the front door, but do it without having to deny who we were. And so it's, you know, we say a lot of times that we're a lot like a mercy hospital. We'll take a patient or a guest who from any denomination. We see about 30 to 40% of our patients are Catholic. However, we see denominations who are Mormon, a lot of atheists and agnostics. And so we've put our chapels are right at the front door with the Blessed Sacrament, so we know everybody's trying to carry, the devil's trying to come in on the back of our patients, and we want to make sure they know what they're getting into.
And are you getting support from the leaders of the church?
We're independent from the church, but we have the blessing of the bishop. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he's given us the Blessed Sacrament. About 5 years ago, we built a convent and have an order of nuns who help operate and run the women's facility. We separate our facilities by gender, and so the nuns are in habits, and so it's very evident who we are. The bishop has also given us full-time priests on staff, so they live in housing at the men's house. And then we use local priests to do daily mass and mass on the weekends. All of our centers are within a block or two of the local Catholic Church also. But as far as actually affiliated with the diocese, we are not.
All those other things constitute a great deal of support.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
And for Catholics, having Christ in the Eucharist present is a real part of healing.
It's gigantic. It's a key piece, obviously, as we look at as we dove into what really was touching people's hearts and what was at the core of, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, more later, is on how they become addicted and why, you know, sin was really at the root of it, artificial satisfaction. People were looking for some way to get that temporary sense. And we found that, you know, that's the lay definition or the secular definition of sin. And when you break it down to the Beatitudes, it was in response to what we were given. There's not a human in the world that doesn't desire happiness, and our pursuit of that happiness sometimes takes an artificial face, which is the devil and sin.
888-318-7884 is the number. If you have an addiction problem yourself, we welcome the call. If a problem in the family, we welcome that call. Or just questions about the Catholic perspective on addiction, 888-31-TRUTH. Michael Vasquez, the co-founder of St. Gregory Centers, is our guest this hour. So from we've learned a great deal in the secular world about addiction, There's been a great deal of science on it. And the church has a certain understanding of the human person that's built up over thousands of years. And so how do these things combine to tell us essentially what is addiction? What's happening when someone is, say, I mean, we see it all the time now. I guess opioids is the big thing in the news. A person is addicted to opioids. What's happening there?
Right. You know, it's interesting how the secular version and the Catholic version are in parallel, but they use just different terminology. So, for example, about 5 years ago, the National Institute on Drug Abuse came out and said, why would anybody even take drugs or alcohol, you know, to a point to where it impacted their life? And they came back with an answer that said to feel good, to feel better, to do better. That was the answer from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. If you go to the Beatitudes, it just talks about the fact that we all want to live happily in a whole human race. There's not one person who doesn't assent to that goal. And so if you think about it, there's a real parallel between the Beatitudes and really what the National Institute on Drug Abuse says, is that we all desire that happiness and we do it through different ways. So typically on the secular side, you get your satisfaction from your living, working, and relationships, both those things. And in a living environment, we talk about the balance. And it's that balance in our life, or that state we create of sleep. You want to average 8 hours of sleep. Activity, 30 minutes of activity, and nutrition, balance, carbs, and proteins. And when those balances get out, it's that needle that's pointing true north, and all of a sudden I just don't quite feel satisfied. And human nature kicks in, given to us by God, that says you've got to feel happy. You just by human nature need to feel happy. So we search out that. And typically our body will regenerate and allow us to deal with those stresses of the day and come back to that level of satisfaction. But in some cases, when we're out of balance, then all of a sudden we seek that, and some people will hoard, some people will max out credit cards, some people will gamble, pornography, then drugs, alcohol, all kinds of dependencies and addictions, and they get that sense of temporary satisfaction, that artificial satisfaction that gives them that short sense of feeling happy or satisfied, and then all of a sudden they find that as that wears off, they need to do it again, and it becomes part of their daily routine, and they become dependent on that to get through the day or to feel normal or to feel happy, as opposed to the normal state of what God desires us to do, which is to find that satisfaction in Him.
And so the traditional spiritual approaches combined with the scientific approaches, do they give you something that's powerfully effective? I imagine there are many, maybe we sometimes spiritualize both psychological problems and addictions. So I just need to pray more. I just need to, I need to be a better person. Are there insights you can give people about how growing spiritually and the science of the thing fit one another?
You know, there's one thing if people are interested in. April of 2011, a research report was released by the American Society of Addiction Medicine. You can go out and Google ASAM, A-S-A-M, and it's the long definition of addiction. So they started 3 years prior in 2008 researching just that exact question and said, really, it's been 75 years since anybody's really looked at this. What is the latest state of research, both neurologically in the brain and what's going on with recovery? And for the first time, they came back and said that it was really that combination of both a psychological issue, a biophysical issue, a social issue, and for the first time, added a spiritual issue. And so what we found is if you go back, and we use a lot of the heart of what Matthew Kelly teaches, which is how do you become the best version of yourself? And if you think about it cognitively, your thoughts really become your beliefs. What you believe really defines how you act out or your habits. Your habits really define your character, and your character really sort of sets your destiny. And so much in life we deal with is punitive, where it tries to change our thought or change our actions. Don't touch that or it'll burn you. Don't do that or you'll go to jail. As opposed to try to change your thinking. And if you could change your thinking about something, then all of a sudden I can change your belief and your actions, and I can really take you back to that character of who you were designed to be or what's the best version of yourself. And so by integrating a cognitive therapy program, with the latest research, we've been able to get amazing outcomes. We've had seen outcomes. We treated over 1,100 patients last year, and a year after leaving in prior years, we've seen over 90% still sober a year after leaving, 84% still sober 4 years after leaving. And it's really because you have to teach those, because people ask, how can you be so different? And what we did 10 years ago, this is our 10th anniversary, was start with a white piece of paper and say, what is the latest research? What is the current knowledge that's evidence-based, that's documented? And we started with that. And so then we're the only treatment center in the U.S. who has not only obviously brought a Catholic feeling to the program, regardless of your denomination, but we're the only treatment program also that has integrated into the program predictive outcomes. And what that means is instead of me waiting for you 6 months from now to relapse and then dealing with that relapse, hoping that you will eventually get it, we weekly measure your comprehension of how what you're going through will help you reach recovery. And at that point, if it doesn't seem to be helping you in your recovery, we intervene the next week to give you sort of not remedial, but additional overviews and sessions on that so that we can intervene before you even leave us so that you won't have that relapse 6 months from now. And I think that's just one example of several that how we try to be different, but yet utilize the mix of what the spiritually you can do and grow, but still keep it scientific and evidence-based so that cognitively we can change your thoughts about drugs as opposed to punitively try to force you to change what you do with drugs.
Michael Vasquez, our guest this entire hour from St. Gregory Centers, treating addiction in a very Catholic way. If you have questions, if you have concerns, if you need some assistance, give us a call, 888-318-7884. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Christian men, beware. With the idols of materialism, entertainment, and the flesh, it's plain to see that the world wants you for its own. Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Lessons to Young Men About Life, Sex, Friendship, Vocation, and Loving with the Heart of Christ, Father Ehrman draws on his experiences counseling men who are struggling to live in the world, but not be of the world. In a unique format, he offers a plan for ongoing conversion, holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 9:18, a Roman official came to Jesus, knelt down before him and said, "My daughter has died, but come lay your hand on her and she will live." Jesus and his disciples followed him, and he did bring her back to life. But on the way, a woman who had suffered many years with a hemorrhage came up behind Jesus and simply touched his cloak. Immediately, she was healed. That's the way it is with God. He has time for everybody. We count time. We spend time. We waste time. We worry about time. We have time on our hands. But he shows us that time is for being available. Love always has time. All time belongs to Him, and whatever time we have is really His. It's just that He is so lavish with it that we think it's ours. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, talking addiction and recovery and the Catholic Church today, for this hour, 888-318-7884, our number, Michael Vasquez, our guest. And Michael, the phones are full, so how about we take some calls?
Great.
Let's go to Marie in St. Louis, Missouri, listening on Covenant Radio. Marie, you are on with Michael Vasquez. Your question, please.
Gentlemen, a quick question. Do the St. Gregory centers accept for treatment those addicted to alcohol?
Actually, Marie, last year, 56% of our guests who came to stay with us were dependent on alcohol. 22% were dependent on opioids or some form of heroin, and then the balance were a mix of meth, cocaine, and now we're even seeing more as more states have legalized marijuana, because a lot of people aren't aware that under today's laws with legalized marijuana, it's not like it was marijuana farm-grown when we were kids 40 or 50 years ago. It's pharmaceutical-grade marijuana that has a much more addictive and a much more euphoric effect or drug effect. So that'll give you an idea of the mix of the patients that we treat typically.
Does that help you, Marie?
And keep up your wonderful work. Bless you and peace.
Oh, thank you so much, Marie. Again, 888-318-7884, the number. We go now to Elizabeth. I don't understand this one. I think it's Elizabeth. Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to say anonymous. I panicked there for a second. You're on with Michael Vasquez.
Thank you. I appreciate your program. So I'm not really anonymous because my question is, do you have facilities in the Massachusetts area?
About 60 to, and depending on the month and the time of the year, 60 to 75% of our patients will be from outside of Iowa. We're located in a rural part of Iowa. So we found that it's best for people to travel, sometimes to get away from that environment. It is designed to be a retreat to where you can come and really work on creating that best version of yourself. And sometimes if you're that first week or two are very difficult as you start to evolve towards your recovery. And we find it's real easy to pick up the phone and say, hey, I'm going to have an Uber driver just take me home. It's real tough from central Iowa out in the middle of a cornfield to call and come back to Massachusetts. And we can't help you if you don't stay. 2 or 3 weeks just doesn't do it. It's a cognitive program has a beginning and an end. It's not a group therapy. Group sessions, it's something that has to be completed. And so we found we have better luck by centralizing the quality and doing it that way. So I know there's a lot of different viewpoints, but we found that's worked the best for us over the last decade.
And you've had success with long-term success with people who are addicted to opiates?
We've probably treated 500 heroin and opiate patients, and we actually have some we have a good understanding. Actually, some of the worst things we deal with are meth is almost more difficult, I think, for some people than opioids, because opioids, you become physically dependent and you start to chase the withdrawal symptoms. Actually, we've interviewed so many opioid patients, and they don't use it for an euphoric effect. You can actually become dependent on either a painkiller or heroin within 72 hours. Now, I'm just talking about physically dependent, not addicted. And definition-wise for us, physically dependent means that if you stop, you show physical withdrawal signs, insomnia, pain, whatever it may be. Addicted means you'll pursue that artificial satisfaction or that opioid with total disregard for consequences. I know if I do this, I could get arrested, I could go to jail. That's really addiction. So we've had great success. But, you know, just the thing that keeps us going is not the success rate. It's the fact that until we can become 100% eradicated, that person who it doesn't work for, because for each family member, it's sort of a zero-sum game. That's great to have great statistics, but if it doesn't work for my family member, then it doesn't matter. So we strive to make sure that every person walking through our door has the same opportunity for recovery, and then at that point, it's in God's hands.
Okay, Elizabeth?
Wonderful. Yeah, I appreciate it. I wish if you would pray for my family member who has had 5 years recovery and relapsed. So
we will. We will pray. And also, if you would like more, you can, and anyone who would like more information on the St. Gregory Centers, you can go to ST, Saint Gregory, CTR.com. So Saint is just ST, ST Gregory, CTR.com. Elizabeth, thank you again for that call. We go now to Anonymous, calling from an anonymous location. You are on with Michael Vasquez.
Is that me?
That's you, Anonymous.
Yeah, I am terribly disappointed that although I have been a listener of EWTN radio stations for the past 4 years, as well as a constant viewer of EWTN, it was only today that I learned that the Catholic Church has a place, one place in the country, possibly two, for rehabilitating people. And although my son has been sober a couple of months, he's spiritually empty. And I know it's just a matter of time before he uses again. So I want to know why it is the Catholic Church hasn't paid more attention to this epidemic.
Okay. Michael?
You know, it sounds like you're even more current information. We do have counselors that cover the phone from 8 a.m. until 7 p.m. Central Time. The number is on our website, as was just given out, or you can call it directly at 888-778-5833. And so it's a challenge spiritually. Again, we work right away. We work constantly so that people understand that the virtues are really how you start to make your decisions. And those decisions, as I talked about earlier, and the choices have to be driven by some guidance. And I know we offered in a state government program our program, and I thought we'd get some real pushback from the idea of utilizing virtues as a core piece of our program. And it was interesting how it's just part of civilization. It predates Caesar in some cases, and as you look at the virtues. And so it's really core to building back your character, and you've got to get that heart and soul back. And again, the devil's trying to make sure that we aren't successful and make sure that, is trying to create and keep this epidemic going. So you've got to the first thing, though, I've got to tell you, which is the heart of it, is we have to, as individuals, if you're in law enforcement or if you're in healthcare, we carry a burden to intervene. It's that one chance to intervene and not accept unreasonable thinking or unreasonable thoughts or unreasonable actions. And if we let that go and keep hoping that maybe it'll get better later, it won't. We have to take every opportunity. If somebody comes into an emergency room, those healthcare providers carry the burden to intervene and get help. The law enforcement carries the same burden, but we as family members need to intervene and make sure that we can intervene and try to get those people help. Now, some will say no. Interestingly, 24 million people in the U.S. meet the criteria for addiction, but only 11%, 2.6 million every year, get help. And only a million actually go to get treatment. So it's very, very difficult. So we understand that. And that's why it's really important for all of us to carry that burden of intervention.
In all of that you said makes tremendous sense, because I made a tremendous effort to learn all I could about addictions, particularly opiate. And you are great to be doing this type of work, and I'm appreciative of that. But why is it that the Catholic Church hasn't become more actively involved in establishing these centers? I'm sure they'll have all kinds of parishioner support throughout the country. This is an epidemic.
It is indeed. Hang on, Anonymous, because we're going to be coming up against a break. Michael, if there's something, a response you wanted to make, you have about 40 seconds.
I think that this is an effort. We've been doing this with our local diocese, and then we've reached out nationally. We've had priests come through, and we continue to communicate the best we can to try to make sure that the people are at least aware that we're available and the church is aware that we're available to them.
Thank you so much, Anonymous, and we will keep you and your son in our prayers. Michael Vasquez, our guest this hour, St. Gregory Centers, treating addiction in the light of the Catholic faith. We'll be right back with more after this.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Dr. Ray Guarendi.
I was raised in an Italian Catholic home. We went to church. That's what you did. And now that I'm older, I can't thank my parents enough for allowing me to know about our Lord, because ultimately the base that they gave me kept pulling me back to the Catholic Church, even though I wandered as a young adult.
The Doctor is In with Ray Guarendi, weekdays 1 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers' 4th National Apologetics Conference, the Reunion of All Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thanks so much for being with us this hour. Next hour, Carlo Broussard will be in here to talk about Jesus. A great topic, but his question, is he Emmanuel or merely a prophet? Tune in next hour for Carlo Broussard. And I want to give you a sense that, or just share this with you, the spectacular store-wide summer sale continues. All books, DVDs, CDs, ebooks, tracks, MP3s, everything we've got, basically. I don't know why I got to go through the whole list. 10 to 25% off. Some are even up to 50% off. Sale prices are available on online purchases, and we think it's just the best summer sale that you will find online. Just go to shop.catholic.com. Our guest this hour, Michael Vasquez, is the founder with his wife, Rose Marie, of St. Gregory Centers, which treat addiction, have been called the most advanced substance abuse program in America, and they are also deeply Catholic in their spirituality, although and practices, although anyone is welcome. 888-318-7884 is the number. I want to give out that before I go to call. We have lots of calls, but before I go back to them, stgregorycenter.com is the website. stgregorycenter.com. If you would like to call them, you can give a call to 888-778-5833. We go now to Olga in New Mexico, listening on 98.9 FM. Olga, your question for Michael Vasquez. Olga, do we have you?
Okay.
Okay. Hi, Olga. We're having a little trouble hearing you. Are you there, Olga?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did you have a question for Michael Vasquez?
For who?
For
what?
I'm going to put you just on hold real quick, Olga, and we'll get that all straightened out. We'll go to Dennis in Hayes, Kansas, listening on Divine Mercy Radio. Dennis, you are on with Michael Vasquez.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is, as a family member or as a friend, do you have any guidance or suggestions for what I could do to kind of help someone recognize the magnitude of their problem and take ownership of it and kind of move towards a decision to seek help in the first place?
That's a great question, Dennis, and something I think you just touched on most people in the U.S. who have a family member, friend, or coworker dealing with addiction. And I touched on it briefly, I think, with the two callers ago, is the fact that we carry a burden to intervene. And in more detail, what I'm talking about is the fact that, think about, as you're dealing with that person, sometimes you really either will not support them, but at least in their effort to continue their actions with the hope that they'll get better. And the problem is, it's not an illness that gets better if it's left untreated. And so what you need to do is actually intervene with the idea of setting guidelines, setting those standards that you would set for any responsible adult. And again, most of the people hopefully we're dealing with are adults. But we're talking about not accepting unreasonable actions, unreasonable thoughts, or unreasonable thinking. And so by, you know, talking about anything from marijuana use, and while it's legal in Colorado, you know, it's okay to smoke pot just because it's legal there, that doesn't morally make it right. And it also, at the same time, now I'm not talking about the true, pure medicinal use, but I'm talking about the recreational side. But I think what you have to do is intervene and make sure they understand that there are guidelines and there are consequences, because there are real consequences if we don't intervene, all the way to, obviously, the person losing a job, losing a family, losing finances, and God forbid, eventually losing their life, possibly. So it's the burden to make sure that they understand that they can't continue this action, but yet continue the comforts they have in life and do it. And that's the piece that is so hard to do. So you'll take teenagers or college kids, and obviously they're using, and you find out, and you think, well, that's fine, as opposed to, and this is an extreme example, and I'm sure my wife will chuckle, is the fact that when our kids were growing up, and they're in their mid-30s now, that I drug tested our kids in high school. And they thought it was very punitive until I sat them down and told them that we're not drug testing to catch you. I'm drug testing to give you an opportunity to make the right decision. I've been in the backseat of a car when somebody spun around and said, hey, just take a hit of this joint. It's not a problem. As opposed to showing them that if I catch you using this or anything and the drug test is positive, you will lose your cell phone, you will lose your car, you will lose the freedom you have when you're off from Christmas break or summer break. So the answer now from the kids in the backseat is, hey, my dad's crazy. He drug tests, and I don't want to lose my car, so no, I'm not going to take a hit of that. Now, I'm not going to guarantee you that works for everybody, or it worked all the time for our kids, but they definitely knew where we stood, and it was that line we drew in the sand that, oh, you know, you drink alcohol, or you do stuff, so why can't I? That's the line that you give when you're in that position. Now, if it's a spouse or somebody else, it's the idea that you have to draw the line. It's something that you can't continue that unreasonable thinking or thought and still have the benefits of being around our children, because you can't drink with them in the car, or you can't be at home taking care of them. So whatever that is, you have to make sure and draw a line and get them to understand, until they get help out of love, it can't continue. And I think that message, and it's hard and it takes a while to do, but the sooner you can do it, the better chance they'll have to get into help and get recovery. And that's the starting point.
Okay, Dennis?
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess, you know, sometimes the challenge is it's someone where there's, you know, maybe not a lot of leverage, I guess, is maybe not the best term, but, you know, not a lot of, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of options for direct consequences. So that, you know, that's just part of the challenge, I suppose.
Oh, as part of your relationship with this other person?
Correct, yes.
Right. Yeah.
So you may be reaching out, Dennis, to their family then, and creating a group of friends or a support group who will create that environment for them then. So you may need to reach out to that person that has that leverage to get them to either recognize it or join you in your effort of love to get them help.
Thanks very much, Dennis. We go now to Anonymous in Indiana, listening on 95.7 Redeemer Radio. Anonymous, your question for Michael Vasquez.
Hi, thanks. Just basically, the two people that I know that struggle with addiction are both pretty severely mentally ill. And from what I understand, from some latest research on mental illness, you want them to go to a facility that treats both mental illness and addiction simultaneously, which is actually kind of the opposite that I thought. I always thought, oh, they'll never get help with their mental illness until the addiction is cured. But they're saying you want to do both simultaneously. Any kind of thoughts on that or advice on that?
Let me deal with it directly because it's something that we deal with every day. What we found, we treated 1,100 patients last year who were diverted from being incarcerated. And what we found was 60% of them had some sort of mental illness and prescription for a psychotropic event, so anxiety, depression. Here's the problem we ran into is the fact that the side effects of coming off of alcohol, illicit drugs, present themselves as mental illness. And so at that point, our medical director identified that you have really two categories. You have true clinical medical illness that predates the addiction or the substance abuse or the illicit drug use. Or you have what's called environmental behavioral health, which was created because of the fact that I just found out I'm a heroin addict, I've lost my job, and I'm incarcerated, and actually you really have something wrong if you're not depressed. And so what we have found is that if they have a true mental illness that predates their addiction, they probably do need to be referred to what's called a dual diagnosis program that will treat their addiction while they're on their mental health medication. Now, this is a few statistics that people may argue with, but I have thousands of patients as experience. 60% of the patients were coming in with psychotropic meds into our program with a mental health illness, as they said, diagnosis. Over 90% had never seen a mental health professional. So what do I mean by that? They went into the local emergency room because they were feeling the side effects of coming off of heroin, told them they were the emergency room doctor, they were feeling depressed, so they were prescribed an antidepressant. Or they went to their family practice physician and said, you know, I'm really anxious, I need a medication, but never said they were smoking meth. And they just hadn't smoked for a while, and they were feeling anxious about coming off. And so it's very difficult, and we spend a lot of time with every patient identifying that, is it an environmental behavioral mental health issue, or is it a truly clinical mental health issue? Interestingly enough, almost 90% of the patients who were on a mental health drug or had a diagnosis turned out for us to be environmental. And when we took them off of the behavioral health drugs and stopped the illicit drug use, and then took the mindset of what is the best version of yourself, to where they got back the hope that they had lost because of that addiction, most never needed their mental health drug again.
Anonymous?
Oh, okay. That's helpful. That's interesting. Wow. I just kind of always wondered about that. But also, so if you do find out that they do need both, is the process then to keep them on their prescriptions for their mental illness and also treat the addiction at the St. Gregory facilities? Like, are that dual diagnosis or dual treatment kind of done there?
No, what we found was such a high percentage of the patients who come to us were environmental that we are not a dual diagnosis program, because out of the first 1,000 patients we treated, we had less than 10 who had true clinical. So we didn't feel that to add the track necessary. So there are dual diagnosis programs out there, and you would just have to continue to keep searching for those. But the incidents, when you really get into the history of a person, a lot of them either are going to be pure, have a true mental health issue that's probably needs to be dealt with, and it's evolved into some addiction, and they need to go to a dual diagnosis program. And then we spend time trying to identify, if it's environmental, then how to get them back into what's that best version of themselves.
Thank you very much, Anonymous, for that call. We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on recovery, addiction and recovery, with Michael Vasquez from the St. Gregory Centers right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Stay with us for more Catholic Answers Live.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers. In 1 Corinthians, St. Paul exhorts Christians to have no dissensions among themselves and to be united in the same mind. And yet, since Martin Luther's rebellion exactly 500 years ago, the apostles' injunction seems to have gone unheeded. What is the faithful Catholic who desires Christian unity to do? Join us at the Catholic Answers National Conference this September 28th to 30th, right here in San Diego. The theme of the conference is the reunion of all Christians. If you want to learn how to evangelize our separated brethren with charity, you don't want to miss this conference, featuring all your favorite Catholic Answers speakers and some superb guests, too. Registration is priced lower than last year, and we have an even lovelier hotel with a better room rate. And September is the very best month to visit San Diego. For all the details, visit CatholicAnswersConference.com. Early bird registration savings expire July 2nd. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com and register today.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Trying to share with you today the Catholic perspective on addiction and recovery. And our guest, Michael Vasquez, is ideally positioned to help us with that as a co-founder of St. Gregory Centers, which address addiction and recovery issues from a Catholic perspective. And Michael, I want to ask you, because we do hear a great deal about this, and many of us, it seems like almost everybody these days has some family connection to opioid addiction. It's a massive problem. Are there special things that we should think about, or things that we should know about opioid addiction?
I think the biggest thing is, obviously, as everybody's aware, because it's in the news, it's become an epidemic, and the number of people that die daily is phenomenal. And so some of the things you have to be aware of, I think, is that people, you'll find heroin users who, as the price goes up on heroin, or as interdiction goes up, the threat of arrest on heroin, will go to painkillers, or people who will go in for a lot of medical procedures, dental procedures, will be prescribed painkillers. And a lot of people don't realize that one of the bigger problems, almost five people every day will take a painkiller today and not have a prescription for it, meaning it was diverted. So anywhere from, you may not have heard of this, but realtors now are being notified to make sure and walk through showings of open houses with people, because people are coming into open houses and ransacking the medicine cabinet looking for painkillers. And so diversion, they did a study of 1 million people who were on painkillers, and 38%, almost 40% of the people had no painkiller in their blood system, meaning they weren't taking it. It was sitting in a closet, they filled the prescription, and they moved it on. So there's lots of different ways you can get started. The problem you get into is the fact that then what you don't realize is you can become addicted to a painkiller within 72 hours. The pharmaceutical industry has done a great job of mirroring or mimicking the molecular structure of endorphins. And endorphins are the neurotransmitter that our brain uses to help deal with pain. And so what happens is we take an opioid or a painkiller or heroin, the morphine molecule, and it attaches to the receptor in the brain, and the brain will then deal with that as an endorphin, and then the enzymes in our brain wash it away when it's done or when that pain's passed. The problem is with opioids, the molecule looks just like an endorphin, so it attaches to the receptor, but the problem is the brain's enzymes cannot wash the molecule away, so it stays attached. And it stays attached longer than a normal endorphin, so now all of a sudden the body builds up tolerance. And then it just needs more and more to get that feeling of satisfaction or the desire we're getting. Most opioid-addicted people we talk to do not use it for a euphoric effect, because when I stop using opioids, the withdrawal symptoms make me feel like I'm going to die. They make me feel like the worst flu I've ever had in my life. And miraculously, if I take another opioid, it goes away. And so we find most of our heroin or painkiller addicted patients are really chasing the withdrawal symptoms, and it just becomes this vicious cycle. And where it becomes an epidemic in the deaths is when you mix it. You either use it to too high of a level, or you mix it with a fentanyl, because opioids are not what we call a U.S. drug. They're cut. So they come from Mexico or from Afghanistan. And so each dealer cuts it a little because he pays a price, and then he cuts it with baking soda, rat poison, fentanyl, whatever it may be, to get a little more weight, and then resells it into the U.S. And then the U.S. dealer cuts it again. And so what happens is you're seeing these deaths because you're seeing either opioids or heroin that is mixed with something else, or the person drinks or takes something else in conjunction with it, and the next thing you know, they're hard or they go into respiratory arrest. And so it's just a cocktail for danger. And so there's an entire matrix of risk factors that if you take over 100 milligrams of a morphine equivalent, you're 11 times more likely to have an overdose than if you don't. If you go take a prescription of painkillers for more than 4 months, you're 7.35 times more likely to have an overdose than if you don't. So people aren't aware of the risks of this, and they need to be aware when they go to their doctors if they're on a painkiller prescription, is to take it correctly as prescribed and be very religious, literally, about taking it as prescribed, because it's when you get off of that prescription as the doctor's trying to use it for a therapeutic reason that then it becomes dangerous.
We'll go now to Olga. We tried earlier with Olga and missed her. We'll try again. Olga's in New Mexico listening on 98.9 FM. Olga, do we have you this time?
Yes.
How can we help you?
Okay. Well, what is the name of the gentleman that I'm Jose what?
No, Michael Vasquez.
How do you spell the last name?
Vasquez.
Is, Vasquez.
I didn't know it was going to be a spelling test. Is there a question that you have?
Well, no. It's just that, you know, it's just that, you know, like the people that I know, and I'm thinking, yeah, maybe it was mispronounced one time, but I thought it continued. Maybe it's just a different.
It's a different spelling. Pronunciation. Yes, okay. It's an American pronunciation. Mr. Vasquez's family has lived in Iowa for a few generations. Do you have a question for him?
My last name is, can you imagine, they're going to just.
Olga, we have lots of folks who would like to get to a question about addiction. Do you have a question about addiction?
Yes, Mr. Vasquez. My question is that I have a brother, and he is in his early 60s, and he's been addicted to alcohol since he was like 16, and we have been trying to help him to get help, and he never admits. He just says, I'm going to die of something. You know, everybody, I'm already old. We just lost a cousin to cirrhosis, and I told him, I said, you know, you should get yourself help. And he says, well, why? I'm already 62, and I've already lived my life.
So you would like to know what to say to that?
I would like to know what to say, and also I have some nephews that are dealing with meth.
Okay, so let's let Michael Vasquez address that question. What do you say to someone who's – I imagine you must run into people who feel it's too late for me, and then the meth thing. Could you address both?
Yeah, I think the big, hardest thing we deal with is if people don't want help. They don't understand and they don't believe. There's typically four reasons people won't get help. 71% of people in America are just like the person Olga just described. Typically, the four reasons are there's a perception that treatment can't help them. The second is they just don't have a perception that they're addicted. They don't believe it's a problem. And that goes back to, and I won't reiterate the brief intervention or the intervention side of what I talked about, is you have to make them aware that it is affecting them. The third is that they don't believe that they have the finances. And then the fourth reason people don't go get help in the U.S. is they've tried before. Almost 60% of the people who come to St. Gregory have been to some type of program prior, and they believe that past failure, they feel all treatment's the same, so this isn't going to help them any more than they could before. So what we have to do is, in the case of the 60-year-old gentleman and the cousins who are using meth, is get them to recognize that their life can be better. There is no way they're the best version of themselves doing what they're doing. And when I talk about that, is not some panacea, but it's that you get your satisfaction in life from your living, working, or relationship environment. So are they healthy? Are they living a healthy life? Are they getting the satisfaction from relationships? And are they getting the self-esteem from that environment? Whether they're retired or working, do they have that self-esteem? If they don't, they're not looking in the mirror and being happy or satisfied. So they don't want to admit it. And at some point, they're going to dig their heels in. And there's some people, God just doesn't have it in the cards for them to get that help. But we can't give up. And I think you have to continue to try to intervene and make them aware.
And as far as the meth addiction, you're also seeing a great deal of that. Olga said she had nephews.
Yeah, meth is very, very difficult. And so what we find is we treat heroin, cocaine, meth, and along with opioids. And the meth is a longer process. It takes a long time for the brain to reconnect. What happens is meth makes the receptors in the brain retract. And it can take up to a year for those to heal. There's studies by the National Institute on Drug Abuse that will show that it takes up to 13 months for the brain to reconnect. And what happens is when those receptors can't connect, you can't experience satisfaction and happiness, which, as I said earlier, is the key thing that drives you to addiction. And so that's the challenge with meth, is you have to really get into a long-term program that is, there's long term. Our program is 2 months long, but there are places that you can look up. Comunitat Chinaquila in St. Augustine, Florida is a 3-year program. Okay. So there are programs like that you may need to look at with meth, because it takes so long for the brain to heal.
We just have a minute left. I'm going to go real quickly to Tom in Des Moines, Iowa. Tom, I'm sorry we left you with such a small amount of time. Succinctly, what did you have to say?
Quite all right. I just wanted to say a sincere thank you to Mike and Rose Marie for continuing their fine program, a program that tells the truth about addiction and, more importantly, about recovery from addiction. You know, there's a way out. I have a college degree in biology. I understand the biochemistry of all of this, and yet I was a crack cocaine addict for many, many, many years, a very highly functional one, and came to their fine program, had the opportunity to attend Mass every day, which was...
And you're sober now, Tom.
Which was beautiful.
Tom?
Sober now, 2 years at the end of May.
God bless you, brother. Wow. We got to go. But that's a beautiful testimony to end with, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
All right. If you'd like more information on St. Gregory Center's stgregoryctr.com. Thank you, Michael Vasquez, for being with us this hour.
Thank you. God bless.
And you need to work on the pronunciation of your name.
I know it. Right. My dad actually came. I told you earlier, my dad came from Monterey when he was 3, so I probably should.
Carlo Broussard up next. Sorry, we got to go on Catholic Answers Live.